maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners listening to this broadcast way after this is over. But however you've decided to spend the hour with us, we're really, really glad to have you. Wow, hasn't it been absolutely amazing out all these beautiful, gorgeous days in Vancouver? And sometimes when it's so beautiful, it's hard to forget about all the things that are going on around the world at this time. And we've got some pretty amazing change makers within our city who are making some differences, not just locally, but on an international scope as well, making it more in regards to gender equality, in terms of healthy sexuality, and as well, healthy relational health. And that is really, really huge. This last weekend, there was a lot in Vancouver, in the Lower Mainland as well. There was Slut Walk in regards to trying to encourage people to recognize the rights that women can wear what they choose to wear. As well as that, there was also the Shakti community, which has also created discussions in regards to violence against women. So it was really, really neat in regards to the discussions that are going on a local level. And I'm very excited for tonight's guest. She is a beautiful, amazing woman. She is one of our top 20 under 20. She is an absolutely fantastic, amazing woman, and I consider her a soul sister as well. And she's doing a fantastic project and done some wonderful aid work overseas as well. And I'm going to let her tell you a little bit more about that. Her name is Anoop Virk, in case you don't know who she be. Check out projectloveschool.org right now, just to go check that out if you're curious and you're a multitasker like me, where I like to see things while I am chatting to people. And I'm very excited to have the lovely Anoop on the show. Anoop, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Caroline. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. You blow me away, by the way.
Thank you. You are so sweet.
No, seriously, you do so much. Several years ago, but another project she's doing, working with women and men and children in the downtown east side, which is pretty fantastic. And then from there, we got to reconnect. Thank you, Twitter. That's all I can say
thank
about
God.
It.
Yes, social media.
We got to connect, got to sit down, and I got to find out about some of the amazing work she's been doing overseas. And as well as that, because of that experience, how that's encouraged her to start her new project, Project Love. Did you want to share with our listeners a little bit about Project Love?
Definitely. So last year, when I was 18 years old, living in sub-Saharan Africa, I think that was the first time, you know, obviously, you know, I know I'm a woman, but I think you realize your gender and how important it is, especially when you go into a developing country in a really male-dominated society where people classify you not as a human, but as a woman, which carries the gender inequality. And I was able to create gender equality and human rights presentations at my business internship, so I started traveling to high schools and to see how successful they were. Of course, they're very hard to start. Why is there a quote, "A man doesn't beat you, a man doesn't love you"? And so Project Love, Letting Our Voices Empower, focuses on education, gender equality, and giving girls equal access to opportunities. And right now, when I was teaching in a community, we are in the process of building a school to create a platform for gender equality, so having 50% girls and making those discussions, because I think that's what's most important, is having those discussions of why this is, how we can improve it, and why are these myths there. And I think education breaks the cycle of all of it.
Agreed. And that was one of the things you mentioned, was about the 50% girls. And I think sometimes we forget in our Western society just that's 50% girls is huge. What would be the percentage on average, with just from your experience, that you found in terms of girls getting an opportunity to go to school?
Definitely. It was way more less. And even though there are so many girls, when I was going to these villages, and they just don't, it's like poverty is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Poverty, the opportunity is taken away from you in a poverty-stricken area. It's unimaginable, and we're seeing all the stuff in Pakistan and India with the rapes, and girls don't get the chance to go to school because they're, you know, their whole purpose is to serve a man. So you're going to get married at a young age and have children. I think what's important now is removing, you know, people are speaking out with globalization and what we're seeing in India, and all the guys, even guys, and that's most important, the guys are standing up in the universities and our newer generations saying, hey, I know our ancestors have done this, I know this has been done before, but this isn't right, and girls should have equal access to opportunities. And sometimes we forget that here, because we're, you know, I was born here in Vancouver and given access And it, we, of course, with the glass ceiling and everything, but it's so much more severe and predominant there. And when you go and travel to developing countries, and I think I just wanted to do something because we didn't, but we fought for women's rights not that long ago. And I think that if we have them, we have to fight for other girls that are around the world because there's so much oppression, and it always seems to be the girls. Girl's fault.
It's interesting you say that about the shame and blame cycle, about how it's always a girl's fault. And I think just the numbers from Amnesty International really speak to that, where it's one out of three women around the world who've dealt with sexual violence before the age of 18. And in terms of being able to let go of the shame and blame spiral and to embrace healthy sexuality, healthy just sexuality in general, is kind of mind-blowing, and sometimes it scares me where I wonder if it's even going to happen in my lifetime. And I'm sorry, I'm such a doubter, which is why I get so excited when I hear about the work you're doing, because it gives me hope.
And I think realizing with globalization, we can step up and say, no, this is wrong. What issue provoked it? Which I'm like, are you serious? Are you kidding me? As if she was wearing, showing too much skin, then she provoked it. Then it kind of, in a sick way, then used it to justify it because she wasn't following cultural norms or she didn't understand it. We kind of have to beat her to understand the rules and everything. And so that was mind-boggling to even have my girlfriends come up to me down there saying, you know what, my my boyfriend, he's not beating me, doesn't love you. I couldn't even imagine being in that circumstance.
No, me neither. And it's interesting because I think it was in the 24 Hours newspaper today. I was reading an article in regards to in India, where one of the merchants had really fought for not having mannequins dressed in scantily clad clothing because they believed that it would encourage men to rape. And I wasn't sure if that was a good thing or a bad thing. To be honest, it made me feel really sad and brought me thinking about just even on the local level, things like the slut walk, where that initiated because of a grassroots movement originally because of Toronto, where a police officer in Toronto was speaking at a class at one of the universities there and was talking about a prominent rape case and said, well, she which, you know, it got everybody angry, and they got dressed and walked all the way to City Hall, the police station. And what was really neat, because I am about a year and a half ago, I had the founder of Slut Walk on our show, and she was just saying that it was really neat because it ended up blooming all around the world. So these are really key, and a lot of that is not just in developing countries, that's just in westernized countries, so, and cities are all around the world. So it makes me wonder more and more. And I know when you and I had our pre-show discussions like a long time ago, as opposed to just recently, I couldn't speak because I was just so busy listening to all the stories that you had to say, and I was blown away because I thought that we'd progressed a lot further than some of the misconceptions. And I was wondering if you'd feel comfortable just sharing some of the things that versus when you first went there, things that you didn't imagine versus what you actually saw, and if it was shocking.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, there were so many hard situations that I was in, and how many times can you be at the wrong place in the wrong time, which I had to face. And I wanted to start these talks, and I knew they were going to be hard, and I knew that a lot of people got angry. A lot of men said, how can you speak? How can you, you know, don't look at men in the eyes, and so many things that, you know, are they cultural norms? How do you go along with that? Because Caroline, I don't believe violence is culture, and I think that sometimes we try to justify certain acts that are happening in the world because they're just so horrifying that we say, oh, you know what, that's culture, that's what they do, but I completely disagree on that. because we're all humans, no matter our skin color, our background, our gender, our race, we're all equal. And I think that that's why we need human rights and basic needs for everyone. And when I was doing my talks, to hear the misconceptions that men would blame somebody, because if they've seen their dad and their uncles beat their wives, you know, when they grow up, they're doing the same things. And I think that's where the whole element comes in, that everything's very socially constructed. And it made me realize how important education is, because I know about sex ed, I know about condoms and everything because of high school and what we were taught and, you know, our surroundings and our mothers. And going down there and hearing the misconceptions still of rape, like if you rape a virgin, your HIV and AIDS is going to go away. And I think I was so shocked and appalled. But then I came to the point of, you know, villages and places that are not urban, how can I get so angry? Because if I was there and I didn't have access to education, no one was teaching me, how would I know right from wrong? How would I know this fact isn't right and this fact is wrong, right?
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I was really naive about that, because when you told me that, I was blown away on multiple levels. I'd heard about it years ago, but I thought just some of the work from the World Health Organization, I know it sounds terrible, but I just literally assumed that the work was getting done, and I know it is getting done. She said it's bad.
And I think that's what gender equality is so important, is because when I was hearing the stories from all these men after my 3 months, just one person, me, saying, Anoop, you made me realize and think twice about rape, just because I'd seen it. And just one person, just myself. And girls would come up to me and be like, Anoop, you made me realize I can say no. And wow, you know what girls in the Western world say and what they can do and what opportunities they have. And just, I think it's so important for education, just because when I was down there, the whole misconception, you know how down there with a very male-dominated society, of course, sex and everything, the male gets to decide if he's going to use a condom. And that's what the whole HIV and AIDS epidemic is. You know, there's no respect to women, and you're cheating on your wife, or you have five girlfriends and they don't know about each other, and that's how HIV is spreading so fast. And it seems like such a huge problem, and such small misconceptions too that were huge, that men would tell me, if you put two or three condoms, then that's more protection. And obviously we know right here, but you know, if they've heard about it with all their buddies and their dads teaching them, you kind of don't think twice, because that's what you learned right and wrong, and that's how we know our facts, right? Our sex facts of what to do and how to use a condom properly, and that's what we've been raised to do. And it's just, you know, kind of thinking that's the same, because if you were born there, you learn, given if you don't have access to those opportunities or those education of even going to school. And you know, sometimes you see a lot of people just hush-hush. You don't really want to talk about it, but it's such a predominant, huge thing that we need to push. And you're realizing how huge giving girls equal access to opportunities so they can control their own bodies. They have, their body is a temple, and they can have a right, instead of their father choosing, you know, you're getting married to this person, that you're supposed to have sex with this person. This is, you know, giving girls the opportunity to be like, stand up and have control of their bodies, and for their daughters too. And I think that's so important. So changing the misconceptions in their generation, so that's what they'll teach their daughters and then their daughters. So it's the problem does seem so big and crazy, and how is this happening? But to realize how we can change it and how much it will change after that is amazing.
I know it's an exciting time, because there's a lot of opportunity. And I'm going to ask this question, just how do you not get overwhelmed and still stay enthusiastic in the face of just some of the just really severe violence, both physical and sexual violence that's going on?
Definitely. I think it is hard, and I'm going to be totally honest with you. When I heard a lot of this stuff, it just made my stomach turn. And I just got so upset, and I was like, oh my God, there's so many people that are thinking this way. How is this going to get better? And it gets you down, and you know, I am a very positive person, but it's okay for times for you to get overwhelmed and stressed out, and how is this happening? But I think that glimpse of hope, Caroline, after those 3.5-4 months of doing those presentations, that glimpse of hope, we're seeing how much people, just the question, why? Why is this happening? Why are we treating women like this in our society? And even with the consequences of, you know, rape and so on, so seeing so many single mothers and, you know, nobody's, with the gender inequality, nobody's held accountable, and there's no consequences for the men's actions. And just seeing how much education can go such a far way, and from all the people that I gave a presentation to, seeing how much we moved forward in such a short period of time gave me so much hope for the future, just saying that just me, one person, could make such a transformation in a community. And it wasn't coming as a Western. I never wanted to come, you know, this is what we do in Western, but just wanting to learn and meet, you know, halfway. Why is this happening? And I learned so much more because, you know, of course, I did get angry. And it's going to backfire because if I'm yelling at a guy, how could you treat a woman like this? How is he going to listen? Is he to come from a place of, okay, I understand, let's talk this out. Let's try to figure, let's come from a place of learning from each other and saying, this is what we, how we do things back home, like women, this is what's happening, and figuring out why this is that. And there's an underlining thing down there, too, just because I learned that I can't yell at someone because they've seen their family do it. They've seen society do it. So why am I going to yell at somebody? And I think the most important thing that even my mom told me from a young age is planting a seed. And I think that's the most powerful thing, empowering women and letting them know that they have a voice for a reason. I think that's why I came up with love, letting our voices empower, because I was saying you have a voice for a reason and you can use it because you are special. Your life isn't just to serve a man. You can do whatever you want to do, and you can reach HIV and AIDS. So important, because what a really funny thing was down there, when I was doing one of my HIV and AIDS talks, someone came into the room that was in a higher position than me and said, oh no, Anu, we don't talk about this kind of stuff. I said, what are you talking about? We don't talk about birth control and condoms and so on just because nobody has sex here until they're married. And I said,
really?
Huh. And I was with a room full of 10, like 30, 40 people, and I was embarrassed that someone interrupted, but I was like, okay, so all of the single girls that are outside on the street that are pregnant and all these girls in the room right now, you're telling me that nobody has sex until they're married. And that's what it is. And if anyone in this room, he was pretty much scaring the girls. Like, if you are one of the girls in the room that has had sex, and that's with fear. So girls get so scared, you know what I mean? And, you know, fear is used as a tactic to make girls, you know, oh, I guess I can't use birth control. Oh, I guess I can't use condoms. And the misconceptions, even with that, of, oh, no, birth control will kill their ovaries. And birth control, you know, just such crazy, wild things.
A lot of crazy myths. Wow.
Realize, but for down there, you know, if I was one of those girls there, I would have been terrified too. If a man was telling me, if I do this, it's going to ruin my body, or I'm going against religion, or I'm going against so many things, I would probably be doing the same thing because I'm so scared to stand up and do something because I don't know that. Like, how can you give freedom when no one even knows what freedom is? And I remember someone telling me that. How do you achieve freedom when you don't know what freedom is? And I thought that was an interesting quote that one of my friends told me. So, yes.
No, that's very true. And it's interesting as I'm listening to, just in terms of just some of the stuff that's happening on a local level as well, where a lot of communities still present day, even in our Western society, still practice, try and encourage abstinence, where they don't want to speak about sex. It's an uncomfortable thing. And just breaking those barriers and making it a safe space that those conversations can be had. Any tips or advice? Because especially when you're there in a situation where it's a country that you weren't brought up in, just with people who were, I guess, basically your higher ups, etc., who are saying, you can't do this, this doesn't happen, and they don't want to face it. In terms of just advice, anything in terms of just being able to still pursue through when you can tell that the system's actually flawed?
Definitely. I think one thing I want to mention, too, is with the whole rape thing, if a girl did get raped, you know how for them, from a societal perspective, how humiliating that would be to go to, say, a police department or telling people about it just because you're not a virgin anymore and who's going to want to marry you? You know what I mean? There's so many elements in it where you feel like it's your fault. Because it's brought in a way that, like, oh, if I got raped, what did I do wrong? And people don't want to talk about it. My girlfriends don't want to talk about it because you feel like you were in the wrong. And the male or who did it to you, you were probably doing something. Were you not dressed the proper way? Were you looking at him in a wrong way? Were you doing something socially not acceptable? And I think the biggest thing of doing those talks and bringing that awareness is coming from a place of respect and honoring the girls, how they have grown up, but also telling them and letting them know what opportunities that they can and what they can achieve. And coming from this, especially I told all of the girls all the time that they can come talk to me whenever they want, and bring that open communication of I would speak about my experiences so that mm-hmm. they could speak about theirs, instead of coming and like investigating and asking them what they've done. Is coming from a peaceful and freedom place where people can be whoever they are and say whatever has happened. And it's hard, of course, when you're in a society where people don't want to talk about that, because mm-hmm. If something has happened to you, you might have done something wrong, or you believe that you have. And I think breaking that barrier and letting them know you did not do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. You did not provoke this. This is not what those barriers, and making it a really free place to speak, so everyone knows, back to judge. Even what we see here with the Lower Mainland, I've known a lot of instances when, if you know, domestic abuse and so far, youth always, what did I do wrong? You know, and what did, and sometimes you don't want to talk about it with your family. You don't want to, if it's very culturally, you don't want to bring shame to the family, and you don't want to go on doing that. And I think it's a very fine line to walk, because it is a very touchy area. But letting people know their rights and their freedom is so important.
Very much. So one of the things I want to touch on, which you brought up yourself earlier, was the fact that creating a safe space, not just for the women, so they can recognize in regards to the freedoms, etc., but also the education for the men as well, and the compassion you showed to them, where it's just like, this is what they saw, this is what they're brought up, this is what they, their concept of normal. But the fact then, in the short time that you were there, you were able to have some shifts where people were saying, this actually isn't right, and wow, I never really thought about it this way. What are some steps in terms of moving forward that, if someone was going over to do aid work in developing countries, that you'd recommend in terms of creating a safe space to have those conversations?
Yeah, and I think what's so important, just with the school in general that I want to build, is people ask me, why aren't you just making an all-girls school? And I think that, for me, personally, I think that with gender equality, I wanted to have 50% girls, so girls can have equal access to opportunities, and having those health talks and gender equality talks, just as I did when I was down there, to see how successful I was in that dynamic. And I think for men, the biggest thing was for me is not coming from a place of judging. And also, when I was down there, of course, it can be very hard to not judge. And people that are going to go do aid work, we're very individualistic. I think, like, from Western point of view, it's like me, you, very separate. And down there, it's more about building relationships. And with a very collectivist, and we're seeing that in Asia and lots of other countries, very collectivist and very individualistic here. And I think that not going down there and expecting results ASAP and wanting to, you know, get into people's personal business right away and making relationships with people and becoming their friend to do these talks. Because if you're coming and doing a presentation, they don't know you, and you're coming from it seems like a Western point of view, and you're standing up there and talking to them like, who is this person? How does this person care about me? They're just talking in general. How does this person want to influence my life? And for me going down there, I think what I learned, what was the biggest thing and the most effective place to come from is in very collectivist and community-based societies, of making relationships. And I think that sometimes we might, or I even here, forget that, and you're just coming, oh, can you do this for me, and this is what I'm going to be teaching you, and this is, but actually getting them participating and becoming friends with people and wanting to really learn about their lives and wanting to learn about everything, instead of just throwing facts at them and this is right and this is wrong. And so that can be hard too, with just communicating culturally, is sometimes we'll say this is right, but coming from a place where you really want to learn and meet halfway and really respect. I think that's the biggest thing, is just respecting other cultures and not getting, because it could be very hard not to get angry when you're witnessing so many things happening that you don't see maybe in your backyard or in your neighborhood, in your city. But taking a deep breath in and seeing the bigger picture, because it is hard not to get overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But to see how much work's being done down there that is positive and is making a difference in the communities. I even talking about it now, it gets me so excited to see what's going to happen in the next 10, 20 years. Because even my friends that were doing talks about in their schools, when they I went to go speak to the schools, but they were also talking about lesbians and gay and bringing up that conversation. Because I don't know if, Caroline, if you ever heard of this, of, you know, raping a woman many times so that she would not be a lesbian anymore. And just so many things that you hear in stories. And I think that bringing awareness, and I think I see so much hope in the newer generations, because when I was going to high school, I saw so much more acceptance to newer ideas, because their ideas were being formed at that time than people that I was speaking to that were much older, because their forms and their perspectives and their vision and everything that they're going to teach their kids kind of molded already, and it was kind of like a rock. It was very hard to change or bring ideas and open minds, and I think that's what I'm so excited about the school is, you know, kids that are fresh-minded and want to learn about the world and want to learn about human rights and your local people that are in your community, and I think it was a breath of fresh air to see that, and that's what gave me so much hope, and that's what's kind of fueling me as well, just seeing how many girls at the end of my presentations were so much more confident, Caroline. They would go speak. They believed in themselves so much more, and they carried themselves with so much more grace because they knew that they were a person. I know that sounds funny from here, but just...
No, it makes perfect sense to me, and I hope it does to our listeners as well, just that when people start to believe in them, changeable, and that's one of the most beautiful things.
Yes, and I think one of the biggest things, too, is having support, knowing that someone is there for you, supporting you, and that's all parts of life, and knowing that someone's behind you and believes in you and knows that you're capable of doing amazing things. And I think that just for me to show those girls, you know what, you guys are so powerful, you guys can do. The hardest thing was realizing how much gender separates people, because I've just been grown up and what my mom taught me, we're all humans, and I think that was very hard for me to wrap my head around, seeing millions, right? Millions of people in different countries believing otherwise. And I think why I empathize so much is, Caroline, what if we were born there? We're so blessed and lucky. And a lot of people who are listening, so blessed that we're born here, but what if we weren't? What if we were born there into these communities, into these countries, and we're girls and we wouldn't be able to go for an education. We wouldn't be able to do the stuff that we do. We would be underneath the man, right? So.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I also wanted to bring up as well is the fact, and you brought it up earlier, and I think in our Western society, sometimes we forget in regards to HIV, that it's very different in different parts of the world, especially developing the antivirals that we have here, which make it where it's not a death sentence, is probably the best way to describe it here, where in other parts of the world, that's not the case, and sometimes I think we forget that.
I think the hardest thing for me down there, especially the kids that I was teaching in a rural community, the ones that were HIV and AIDS positive, I think it was so hard just realizing the how many opportunities here and how many outreaches we have to get health care and all of that, and seeing how many girls and everything that's going on down there don't have access to and so on, and it was kind of upsetting for me to see. And I think talks and having open discussions about HIV and AIDS and making it so that it's an everyday part of life, that we all want our community to be safe, and we all want, and I think that's what the outcome is. You don't want your daughter or your child or your husband.
No.
That's the thing. It's all, we're all humans, and we all have that element where we don't want our family to get impacted with that. And I think bringing that truth and that authenticity of human connection down there was really, really important, because nobody wants that, right? We're all humans. Nobody wants to be and to see how huge of an epidemic down there it is. And I think the biggest thing is education and giving girls the right of their own body and owning their own body so that they can have full control and then teach their daughters that. And that's how we're going to change. And I have so much hope for it. And I really think that it's going to, things are going to change in a positive direction for years to come.
I hope so too. I've got two questions for you. One is, as they start to become more empowered, how do we shift so they still stay safe? Because granted, I know many of them are getting beaten now, but just to make sure that the violence doesn't escalate as the fabric of the society starts to shift.
Definitely. I think the biggest thing, that's why I was saying that 50% girls in school, the biggest thing is men. It's not just about empowering women and giving girls equal access to opportunities, because they're living in a society where they're all men too, and those are the people that they're going to have relationships with and marry and date and
love
and raise their own children. I think having those discussions with cement is so important, because what I thought when I was down there too is, you know, after I leave, what's going to happen? After I leave and come back to Canada, is everything going to shift back into place, because the girls, you know, in the workplace don't want to act a certain way? And I realized in order for freedom, is men are so important. And sometimes when men hear me talk about gender equality, they think the issue kind of doesn't affect them in a sense, just because, oh, that's a woman's issue. Oh, that's for girls' issues. But realizing how important, how men play such a huge impact with that, because it's their sisters, it's their daughters, it's their wife, it's their mother. Giving those girls a chance to go for their dreams. And they're the ones that are not, you know, when they're educated and they understand the power that women can do, and that they are equal, and that they're not less than them. Because we've seen through history, when we kind of put someone on a lesser pedal, then it justifies cruel acts. Just like the Jews and blacks, what we did in America, just putting them on a lower level, saying, you know what, oh, they're not human, or they're less than this, and it, in a sick way, it kind of justifies acts to be done. And I think that's what's down there, is bringing them, realizing that girls are a huge factor to this. And I think that's one thing I want to say with the gender equality, just because sometimes my men might not think, oh, that doesn't impact me. Oh, that's not, you know, that's not my thing. But it really, really is.
And I think that's awesome, because especially with the 50% girls, 50% guys in the school, and as well, even on a local level, we're seeing that when I was at the community cafe through the Shakti Society this weekend, it was really neat, because about a third of the participants there were actually men, which made me very excited. And just with some of the other projects on a local level, I know battered women's support services on a local level right now are just trying to encourage men in terms of ending violence to stand up. So it is really a world's issue on so many levels, but it just seems different. And sometimes I think as Westerners, and I know I'm guilty of this too, where sometimes I think, oh, it's not happening in our backyard, but it's happening everywhere.
Definitely. And I think what we mentioned too, it's so, I thought it was so empowering just with the India cases, the rape cases, seeing all the men come out from universities and just men saying, no, this is not going to happen to our sisters. This is not going to happen to our daughters. This is not acceptable. All those men that came out, I thought it was so empowering because they were transforming their communities and their societies too. So it just didn't seem like a woman's issue. It's a world issue. And it's impacting exactly what you're backyard as well. And it's not just I think that's what's hard too. Sometimes you think it's on a different kind of planet. It's always on the other side of the world, so it doesn't really impact me, and you're not seeing it. Sometimes when you don't see it visually in front of you, it kind of removes you from the situation, just because you don't think it's happening, but it is, even here. And I think that I see so much hope, just like all the men that are coming out and people that are being interested in it and wanting to change it. And I think change is going to change a lot of things. Just, I know it sounds so vague, but change is going to happen, and it is happening. And to see, I'm very excited for the future because people are getting educated.
And I think that education goes a long way. So paint me a picture about what Project Love, the school, looks like.
Definitely. So right now, we're coming to the ends of securing our land in Zambia in an area that I taught called Kamatipa. And why this is so important to me, I guess, in a sense, is while I was also doing those gender equality presentations and human rights presentations and doing my business internship, I was also teaching on the side in this community, which was super rural, and all of the kids were vulnerable children and orphans, and lots, a couple of them had HIV and AIDS. And I think that's the biggest thing of having making a small, sustainable school, I think it's going to make such a big ripple effect. And we see that with so many projects of something successful making a ripple effect into the community. And which I'm most excited about is having the 50% girls and the 50% boys, and bringing that together at a young age, where, you know, the perspectives and the morals and how you view life is kind of, you're kind of exploring yourself. And I think what's so important of having those HIV and AIDS talk, especially in a community where all of the kids are hit by it, either their parents have passed away, or, and that was a really big thing for me, is one of my friends was telling me that, like, they go to, I don't know if that's because it's a very community-knit place and they know their neighbors, and they found it so funny when I was telling them, like, you don't know your neighbors, you don't know every single person on your street, and I was like, no, I don't, which I found was really funny. But he went to over 30 funerals a month, And I think that education is so important on so many levels, from giving girls equal access to opportunities and also talking about HIV and AIDS and talking about human rights. And I'm very excited for it, and hopefully we'll start building next year and have it done next year too. And I'm just excited to seeing what my 3 months did down there with the talks, to see how school is going to go, and to see how much of a positive impact it's going to be, because it's going to be for years and years and years, to see how much generational change is going to happen. I think it's remarkable, and I think seeing the change that's happening when I was going and visiting younger schools and high schools, they're being exposed to, you know, the Western things and internet, and they're realizing, what is gay, what is lesbian, and introducing those facts and making them more socially acceptable, because they're understanding there's other people in the world that live like this, and it is, someone is like me on the other side of the world. Maybe I can't talk about it here, but there, and I think it's making the world smaller, in a sense, that we're all realizing that we are all coming from the same place, and we're all going to go to the same place, and we're all humans, and I think that that's what's most important, and I think it's going to be amazing.
It's exciting.
Definitely, and you are more than welcome to come to the school in Silt.
I would like that very, very, very much. That'd be amazing. For you personally, in terms of from just a shift, because obviously creating Project Love was one of the results that came out of your experience for doing the aid work overseas. What other ways has it changed you personally? Like from who you were before you went versus, because you've always been a change maker, but how has it changed you?
Definitely. I think before, of course, I was so involved with volunteering and had those titles beforehand before I went on my trip, but the word gender equality didn't mean anything to me. That was just something, it seemed foreign, the concept of gender inequality, and it seemed something that wasn't impacting me in a daily life. And I think that I had no idea that I was going to be put in a situation and take that and as a learning curve and to start these talks, because I was going for a business internship. I had no idea that this was going to happen. And coming back made me so much more aware of what girls face on a daily basis, and it made me, I just still think about it every single day while I'm here, and this is why I think I'm so ambitious and determined to have a school and get funding for the school and having it up, just because I realize what girls face, and you know, there's millions and millions and billions of girls on the planet who are faced with this every day, and I think it made a lot of soul searching just for myself personally, to realize how I've grown up and morals that I've had, and realizing a lot of people don't have the freedom and rights I have, and seeing what can I do, because sometimes we always kind of wait for something to be done and see, like, oh, there's more important people that are taking care of this issue, you know, there's organizations that are taking care of this issue, and you kind of leave it to somebody else. The biggest thing is, if you want to see change, you do it yourself, right? And you act on yourself, and and it's changed me so much more, because it's molded me into who I am, and my passion has always been to help people. And I think even the aspect of poverty, working with homeless shelters here and on the downtown east side, seeing what homeless is here, and then and going abroad and seeing poverty on a whole nother level there, was really impacted my life as well, and just not taking things for granted. And I think that's hard, because we live and living in the present and seeing things firsthand, and it just made me appreciate life so much more and made me realize what's important and what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I know, as cliche as that is, but
no, it's exciting. It's a beautiful space to be in. And I'm grateful for that, because you bring a lot to the world. So it's exciting.
Thank you, Caroline. You're so sweet.
No, I'm serious. It's true. The other thing I want to bring up as well was a thing about just the fact that sometimes different organizations would go in and do surveys with the women, whether or not there was violence and abuse. And until you actually had those really frank discussions, as opposed to just questions that were on a survey, people were not getting the right answers. And I was wondering if you could speak to that, because that blew me away.
Yeah, definitely. When I was in New York for the Global Bar, and even here, and I think what kind of struck me the most was when we're collecting data and statistics of, you know, rape and domestic abuse, and I the women went out into communities and gave surveys and said, have you ever been sexually exploited or assaulted? And in these communities, and 100% of people said no, originally. I said, how is this happening? Because we've heard stories, we've heard everything. And they went down there again and said, okay, this is what sexual abuse is. This is what sexual exploitation is. And explained it and said, has anyone ever touched you like this? Has this ever happened? And it changed. The results changed from complete 180. And people were like, yes, that has happened. And coming to, especially giving the privacy and disclosure for the women and girls, saying that we won't share this with anyone. This is, we won't, like, you know, go to the men and tell them that you told us. And I think that's what really captured me is education, right? Because we can go in and say, have you ever been sexually exploited? Have you ever been raped? And, oh, no, we don't do that here. Oh, no, there's no gender inequality. But then actually explaining that's what it is. Has anyone touched you? Has any man touched you like this? Mm. And the results changed completely. So I think that's what struck me the most, going down and doing development work and just educating the girls, letting them know that they can say something and it's okay, and seeing what the results did, because so many people, I think it was like 70, 80, 90 that came back and said yes. So I think that was a very powerful statement and story that I learned.
No, that's hugely powerful. And I'm going to ask a really weird question, but I need to ask it. Is, in regards to shame and stigma, was that there before, where it was almost like the families, and I'm going to think back to like Westerners in the 1950s and 60s, where we just didn't talk about stuff that happened in the family. Is it that concept, or before they realized it was something that was bad, was there no shame or stigma attached to it?
I don't think it's either or. I think it's a mix of both.
Okay.
Just because, yeah, it's so interesting to go down there and I remember when I first started doing the talks and talking about sex, I was like, oh, what are you talking about? Oh, my gosh. I'm like, how can you not talk about this when this issue is so predominant down here? Like, oh, the girl, I was like, what? Why are you guys all yelling at me? And they were like, oh, no, you don't talk about that. You don't talk about that. I'm like, okay, so I'm not supposed to talk about sex, but we have this huge HIV and AIDS problem. We have all these girls that are getting assaulted in different ways, so we're not supposed to talk about it, which mind-boggled me, and I think that it seems so hush-hush because it's kind of something that you don't want to talk about, and so many stigmas attached to it, but bringing a safe place especially brings out natural responses, and they know that it's privacy and it's secure, and you're coming from not a place of judging, and also explaining things in a different way of sexual exploitation, and because at first, whenever anyone asks you, oh, has this ever happened to you? Kind of something, the questions that they asked you are, has anyone ever paid you for sex? Has anyone in this community ever paid you to do sexual acts? And then it changed. And then the answer's like, yes. Okay, well, if someone's paid you to do sex, that means sexual exploitation or so on. So have you ever been? And they'd be like, oh, yes, I have, right? And just bringing those conversations up and letting, and education plays a huge role in that, right?
Mm-hmm. No, it's education plays a huge
role. Yeah, you don't really think twice about it. Like, it's all the facts and all the education that we know about sex and how we've been raised. You don't really think twice about it because it's just something you know. Mm-hmm. But then going to a place where, you know, it's not really well talked about and people don't know the facts. I'm like, how do you not know? But how can I judge? Because I've been taught from school. I've been taught, what do you think? How would we? Right?
No, it's very true, because if you're not taught, you don't know. And it's always that happy balance where it's just like, well, you know, is there shame and stigma? You know, it's kind of like that whole concept, like what makes you feel bad? And I know that's a weird question to ask, but the reason I have is because I've had some of the ladies that I've worked with in the downtown East Side where there was incest, where they didn't realize until they were adult that it was wrong.
Mm-hmm, right?
So there wasn't shame or stigma.
That's a huge part is if something's socially accepted or it's private but it's socially accepted and things just kind of seem natural in a sense that you're seeing this and you're seeing different acts happen in your community or even in your household until I came and said why would you think any of those things were bad or good or you know how would you think to do it differently in the world just because you've seen those acts and you've maybe participated in certain things. I think that was most important with the guys that came up to me. I said, you so much for having these talks on how to treat women, because, you know, I didn't know that was even a possibility. And girls mm-hmm. would come up to me, I didn't even know that was a possibility. I didn't even know those bigger horizons and open up your mind and realizing potentials of so much more. And I think that's what's great, to have, you know, be educated and have open discussions. And I think discussions were amazing, because, yes, they were heated. They were very heated. But I think that's how you bring up important issues, is have, why are we getting so heated about this? Why is everyone getting so angry? Mm. We need to discuss this, because nobody wants to talk about it. And I think having those talks and open discussions got me angry, got them angry, but we learned so much from each other and realized a place of no judgment and wanting to learn from each other. I think it took me to a point, because, of course, if you don't, you go to a different country and you're hearing some things that might appall you, you're going to react to them in a way. Mm-hmm. And I think I just wanted to learn, because it seemed like all of the oppression from witchcraft, wizardry, and abuse and rape and everything, it seemed like it was all women. It was always women's fault. It was oppression of women, like, as always. And I just wanted to know why. Like, how did this happen? Because I had no idea, and it seemed to always be blamed on the woman, never the man taking the consequences of the blame for it.
Mm-hmm. And it's exciting that is shifting, and mm-hmm. I applaud you in regards to doing the work that you're doing. And I think in terms of people moving forward, if they've wanted to get involved with aid work, or with Project Love as well, just in terms of being able to create safe spaces is really key.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important everywhere, right? When yes. you're talking about so many different topics, even here, because we're all humans, right? It's mm-hmm. like, it's not like a foreign concept of those no. people need this. We need this too, because that's how we're going to talk. If someone came up to me and asked me really private questions, first I'd be like, excuse me, what? No, no, that's never happened to me before, because you're embarrassed, you're shy. But, you know, here, even having open discussions and topics, and then we're more open to tell mm-hmm. our feelings and what's happened to us. And I think realizing, the biggest thing is realizing that we're all equal. And, you know, for me, just realizing before I went that everything kind of seems socially constructed, in a sense that people are telling me this, I would believe it too, right? Mm-hmm. And this is why being born here, learned different things, and that's why I believe things too, so.
No, I think that's awesome. How can, if anybody wants to get involved with Project Love, how can they get involved? Like, what are some things that you're looking for right now? If they need one to donate, all those kinds of things, how can they help?
Definitely. They can go to www.projectloveschool.org, and you can donate from PayPal, or you can send us an email and contact us. Just send us an email. It'll go to me. And if you have any ways that you can help, if you know, you know, companies or container companies that would send a container down there, so many options. I think that's the biggest thing, is everyone helping in any way that they can and showing for something. And you can find all of that information on the website. And I think just coming together and helping a broader cause, no one's doing anything. And I think for me, living there and understanding, having those connections and having the Zambian committee and the team down there, that it'll actually go to the right cause and it'll help so many people. And the school's not just hitting gender equality and things that are really, really important, but giving kids lunches and incentives, teaching income generating skills, and giving girls the chance to, you know,
make exciting chapters in your life. What's next for you? What do you envision? And this is going to sound like a really broad comment, but basically in the next 20 years, if you could wave a magic wand and all the things you want at this stage, because I know that's going to shift as each adventure evolves and changes you, but what would you like that to look like?
The rest of it is honored if the work that I've done continues, and I just love to do what I do. I love to help people and to see that it's impacting people's lives in such a positive way gives me joy. It makes me happy. And I'm very excited for the future.
No, I think it's awesome. And I have one last question for you. You can recommend just being that there's opportunity, but for some people it gets really draining. Anything that you can recommend so that they are able to basically give, but at the same time hopefully be able to protect themselves as well, so they don't become jaded as they're doing the work.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing, is when you're going and you're immersing yourself in an environment that you're not very familiar with, mm-hmm. and you're seeing problems that you might not see back at home and situations, it can be very overwhelming, but taking one step at a time and not trying to, you know, because we all want to change the world. Mm-hmm. We all want to make the world a better place, and I think taking one day at a time and not trying to overwhelm yourself, and coming from a place of, I think, empathy is the biggest thing when you're working with people and social aspects, because sometimes you could be like, why is she doing this, or why is she acting this way? But imagining yourself in that person's shoes and what they've gone through and the pain and suffering that they've gone through, to put yourself in that situation, to realize, you know, their actions and how they might react to what you're asking, coming from a really personal place instead of coming from, like, you know, when you're working with this even grassroots thing and working with something so personable, you don't want to invade anyone's privacy, because I think empathy is the biggest thing for me, just because if I was in their position, what would I want people to do for me, and what would I want them to ask me? And I think sometimes we can kind of forget that, and we can go in there wanting to change the world and be like, why is this happening, and trying to get to the bottom of it, but realizing their personal and private boundaries as well, and what they want to share, and moving at their pace, because sometimes we want it right away. We want to see tasks taken right away, but, you know, people's journeys and what they go through, it takes a longer time, and people go through at their own paces the actions that they want to take, and the next step they might take at a different time and a different speed. And just coming from a place of love, I think that's just loving people and respecting them, and wanting to change for the better, and coming, I think empathy is a really big thing.
No, agreed. I think if we don't have empathy, it's really hard to do that work. And that work is so valuable and so important, especially today, where we've got so many opportunities between technology, et cetera, to make the world a smaller place. And I mean that in the most beautiful way possible, where we're able to communicate and connect with people that perhaps we wouldn't have been able to do, and have so many more resources than we ever have. It's a really exciting.
Because honestly, volunteering will change your life. And I know every single person who's volunteered will tell you that. Giving your time to help other people is remarkable, and it gives you so much more than you ever think that you're giving to the person. And it is very inspiring. And that stuff, when you see so many people stepping up and wanting to help, I think that's what we should focus on, the positive, because the negative sometimes can be overwhelming, and it seems like it's such a huge problem. But focusing on the positive is the best way, and that's, you know, having hope, because without that, everybody would probably be down and sad and crying all the time, right?
That's so true. And that would be a very sad world to watch.
Definitely, all the time, and you're just like, oh my God, it's so overwhelming, then nobody would want to help, and nobody would want to make change, and everyone would just be, you know, suffering and sadness, and it would be a very sad world.
It would be.
Definitely.
Anoop, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I really
appreciate
it.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And I applaud you for all the amazing things you're doing. And for listeners out there, if you want to check out projectloveschool.org. There we go. That would be fantastic, and see some of the amazing work, get involved, find out, and just see what you can do to make the world a better place in your own way. And Anoop's a pretty amazing example of what you can do, and when you're collaborating and changing things. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And up next, even though he hasn't come in yet, but he should be. Oh, I'm hearing he is not in. So Hans von Claus, who's normally in tonight, is not in. But I think we may be seeing some Vampire's Ball very, very quickly. And I'm getting a nod from Pyra. So very excited. So you're going to hear some awesome music from Vampire's Ball coming right up. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a wonderful night, everyone. Bye-bye. $1 billion.